You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC, Boston College. Before we begin, a brief reminder. The views expressed in this hour belong to our hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WZBC, Boston College, or its Board of Trustees. This is not a space for polite restraint. This is a space for truth, spoken clearly, urgently, and without apology. Good morning, good evening, wherever you're listening from. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host and narrator, Abby Masri, and you're tuned in to This Week in Palestine. Today is Sunday, February 15th, 2026. You're tuned in to This Week in Palestine, a space where truth isn't shaped to comfort the powerful, where resistance is not metaphor but the rhythm of daily survival, and where solidarity is not a passing gesture but a heartbeat carried across generations. From the heart of occupation, voices rise, not alone, not as whispers swallowed by empire, but together, in step with movements around the world that insist on justice, dignity, and liberation for all. This is more than a broadcast. It is a lifeline, a thread stretching from Palestine to every corner of the globe, binding shattered homes to unbroken hope, binding rubble to resolve, binding grief to a future still worth imagining. It is a reminder that even in the darkest nights, the flame of defiance refuses to fade. Each week we bring reporting that refuses disguise, analysis that cuts through distortion, and reflections that center Palestinian life in all its depth, struggle, beauty, and humanity. We do not soften, we do not dilute, we speak with clarity, because the stakes are far too high for anything less than truth. We trace the architecture of power, the policies that suffocate, the narratives that erase, the forces that silence, and we follow their echoes across borders, from Ferguson to Jenin, from refugee camps to classrooms, from Gaza to the conscience of the world. This Week in Palestine is not a refuge for polite avoidance. It is testimony. It is urgency. It is solidarity without apology. Because the struggle for liberation is not confined to one land, one people, or one moment in time. It is shared. It is global. And it is sacred. In this broadcast, we examine how political narratives are crafted, how they're used to discredit critics, and how they shape public understanding of the crisis in Palestine. We bring you a must-listen discussion between Wally Rashid and Elise, a local Palestinian Christian living in the West Bank under the weight of military occupation, an occupation that Netanyahu once falsely framed as the only place in the region where Christians can practice their religion freely. Wally Rashid is a Palestinian-American YouTuber known for breaking down political narratives with clarity, humor, and sharp analysis. His channel focuses on exposing misinformation about Palestine and amplifying stories that mainstream media often ignores. Over the years, he has built a loyal audience by combining accessible commentary with a strong commitment to truth and justice. And through it all, our focus remains on Gaza and the West Bank, lands under siege, enduring what no people should ever endure. Homes reduced to rubble, lives uprooted under the weight of global indifference. Yet one truth remains: Palestinians continue to resist, even now, even as the threat of renewed violence looms. So we ask, when will the world confront the cost of its silence? When will conscience rise above convenience? Stay with us as we cut through the noise, as we lift up the resilient, as we hold space for truth that refuses to be buried.
I'm here today with Alice Kissia. She's a Palestinian Christian activist living in occupied Bethlehem. She's going to be sharing her experiences with you guys today about how life is like living under Israeli occupation. Alice, thank you so much for joining today.
Hi, Robbie. Thank you.
So let's just start off and tell me a little bit about yourself and your life and the situation you're currently experiencing living in the occupied West Bank.
As we all know from the news, it's getting worse and worse, with the settlers' attacks, with the settlers' violence and land theft, and especially now with the cabinet decision with passing the law, the Jordanian law. So much checkpoints, so much, life is getting really harder than before, which is, with all of this settlers attacks, people are thinking really to immigrate, and especially Christians. And in my case, I'm just like busy with fighting not only settlers, also trying to think about the courts that coming on the way, that the settlers, when they accuse me of running over a soldier, and the before 1 year, more than 1 year, me and my mom, when we were arrested, and the court has acquitted us, they released us, and then they filed the same lawsuit against us just to make our life more miserable. So you cannot have one thing to deal with. You have to deal with many things beside the checkpoints that we have every day, beside the crimes that we're hearing in the 48 areas, beside the settlers attacks. Just getting crazy. And I don't think that there is worse than this today.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm so sorry to hear that. Explain a little bit more. How do the settlers treat Christians in the occupied West Bank? Explain a little bit more about that.
I remember the settlers, when they invaded our land, they said that after Al-Mafrur, we're coming to Bethlehem to kick all the Christians out because this is our promised land. And that's what they are trying to do. Actually, they are trying to force the Christians to immigrate in order to take over Bethlehem and to raise the Islamophobia, their propaganda. The settlers, they don't care about Christians, Muslims, and even Jews. We saw that Jews activists, that they were defending Palestinians, are being pepper sprayed, are being attacked. So those settlers, they are well trained. They are like an organized mafia, yes, or an organized army, to kick the Palestinians out of their homes, lands, and to take over. And just right before 2 weeks, we heard about this old woman that have been attacked by settlers in her own house in Ramallah, and her son was defending her, and he got arrested. So Christians are being persecuted in Bethlehem or in the West Bank. And it's not only about Christians or Muslims. It's about human dignity. It's about human rights. Like, till when? I don't know.
How does the IDF treat Palestinian Christians and Muslims? How are the IDF respecting you guys? Or the IDF, is the IDF any better?
I don't think there is any difference between Christians and Muslims. As long as you are Palestinian or Arab, you're still second-class citizen. Yep. So I don't think there's a difference. Yes, there are more racist than others. You can see the difference in, like, let's say, around Bethlehem, they are trying to be like pretend to be much nicer, you know, but they are not. They are so racist. And I have been facing this, me and my family, especially from the police. So there's no difference, actually. As long as you are Arab Palestinian, they don't really care.
Do the IDF also attack the same way the settlers do? Does the IDF protect the Palestinians from settler attacks? Or does the IDF explain that situation?
No, they don't protect Palestinians. Just for example, when I'm a Palestinian with an Israeli citizenship, and I some settlers attacked me last year, and they came and arrested me. And sometimes they say, no, you have to call the police. And sometimes the police say, no, you have to call the IDF. And then they both try to manipulate the situation to come even later until everything is, you know, the fight with the settlers done. They come at the end, like the police at the end of the movie. So, and they come to arrest you or me, like the Palestinians. They don't come and arrest the settlers. Even once the IDF and the police caught the settlers stealing from our land, and they kicked them out, and they didn't arrest them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they didn't arrest them. They told them, just don't come back here. So, you know.
Are some of the IDF settlers themselves?
Yeah, of course. If not themselves, they have their relatives or friends that they know. What happens really that, for example, those settlers know that their friends or relatives, they work today. So they go and harass some Palestinians, and they call their friends to come and harass Palestinians with them, the IDF. Mm. And when you call the police or the IDF, and they know that there are army there, they don't intervene. So it's like a well-planned plan, you know?
And sometimes the IDF help in attacking. Sorry. Sometimes the IDF even attack with the settlers?
In our case, yes, they attacked some activists. They kicked us out. They kicked many Palestinians out of their homes, even they know that it's illegal what they are doing, but they don't really care. We see what's happening around the West Bank with the soldiers treating the Palestinians on the checkpoints, on the CAB areas. It's just getting crazy. Like, it's not stopping. It's getting worse. And I don't know. Like, I don't know what solution we should have. I don't know when, like, countries will act, because we are tired of saying. We are tired of statements. Even the churches, they're making statements, but we've been listening to those statements since ever. And then.
Yeah. In America, people, Zionists say that the reason Palestinian Christians are leaving Bethlehem is because of the Palestinian Authority. Can you please tell everybody listening, is it the Palestinian Authority or is it the occupation that is causing the emigration of Palestinian Christians out of Bethlehem and the West Bank?
Okay, so let's say before the Palestinian Authority was founded in 48, the percentage of Christians were much higher in 48. But after the Israeli came, most of the Christians immigrated, and now we are less than 1%, not because of the PA, because of the occupation, because of the economical situation, because of the political situation. The PA has nothing to do with this. Actually, the PA doing great job with the Christians, and we have many Christians politician leaders in the PA. So I don't know, like, it's not even relevant.
How do Muslims treat Christians in the occupied West Bank? Because this is also what Zionists in the United States state, that the reason Christians are leaving Bethlehem is because of Muslims. So what is the relationship like between Palestinian Muslims and Christians in the occupied West Bank?
We are brothers and sisters, and we are door to door. Like, there's nothing with this propaganda is really related. Even before the 48 Jews, Christians, Muslims, they used to live together. And now we are living together, Christians, Muslims, in the West Bank, and there is no problem. And we also have some Jew friends coming to visit. So it's not even working. Their propaganda, it's no more affecting anyone. My best friends are Muslims. In Christmas, my friends come to celebrate Christmas. In Easter also, now we have Ramadan. We're going to do like lots of things in Ramadan, iftar, going to visit people. So it's not really what they think. I say that they should come and visit Bethlehem or the West Bank so they would really witness what's happening. And I don't think it's the religion. The problem is not the religion. The problem is the political propaganda about religion. Mm. And the misusing of the religion to target their goals or their political goals in order to win. So the religion has nothing to do with this. Christians, Muslims, and even Jews, Druze. I have friends from all religions. And I don't think that this is the problem. The problem is that with the people that they are blind and they refuse to see the truth. And that they think that their God is better than another religion God. Like, at the end, we are all worshiping the same God. And God is within. And if you refuse to love another people because of their religion, so you don't believe in God. I don't think this is God.
Yeah, no. You mentioned you have Israeli citizenship, but you're a Palestinian. You live in occupied Bethlehem. Can you explain a little bit about that? Do you have a Palestinian ID? And how did that happen? Explain what that means.
So, my father is Palestinian. He doesn't have an Israeli ID. That's why I used to also live in Jerusalem or in Haifa. My mom, she's from 48, Palestinian 48. My grandmother, when they entered in 48, the massacre, her parents left her. I don't know if you heard about Ein Karim. It's a city it's one of the most beautiful cities in Jerusalem. Her parents left her in a monastery. And she never knew her parents, and she grew up with nuns, and she was raised alone, and she died alone. She got married to my grandfather. He's a French citizen. And then that's how my mom got the French and the Israeli ID. But my father, he never had the chance to get the Israeli ID, so he has the Palestinian. And because he cannot pass to the Israeli side, so we are in Bethlehem. And, you know, it's really hard to live like on both sides. And it's very expensive, living in Israel. And, also here, the economical situation in the West Bank is really hard. So it's a mess, actually.
But you call yourself Palestinian.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
I'm rooted.
You're rooted. I love that. Why do some Arab Christians defend Israel?
Some of them are brainwashed. Some of them are afraid of losing their permission to be in Israel. Some of them are afraid because they're, let's say, cowards. Okay. Some of them, they have a political goals, financial goals. Depends. Really depends. I don't mind having peace with anyone, you know, as long as, you know, you treat me as human beings. But I don't think that it's relevant anymore, because what we see now, it's beyond evil. It's beyond evil. And it's just, for me, it's time that people wake up of what's really happening. And the Palestinians should get their rights and justice.
Absolutely. And, you know, what would you like to say to Christians in America that believe they have to support Israel because God told them to?
It's always putting everything on God, you know, like whenever people want to justify anything, oh, God told me, oh, God did this, oh, God did that. It's just crazy. I think if we put all religions aside and act as a human being, and here you can find the difference between the justifying according to religion or their beliefs and what's really humanity means. And if they really know Jesus and know God and follow Jesus' teaching, they wouldn't do that. They should demand for justice and peace for everyone, and not to be afraid to say the truth.
Yeah,
and they can come to the West Bank and witness what's really Christians are facing. Like with all the social media and all technology that we have, they are still blind. It's crazy, but they still have the chance to come and see and witness what's really happening.
Have you heard of the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee?
Yeah.
You have. Has he ever came to your area, to your family's village? Has he ever came to Bethlehem, I'm assuming? What do you think about him? And have you talked to other people, to other Palestinian Christians, and what do they think about him?
Actually, he came to the Christmas Mass on Christmas Eve this year, like on 2025. And he was there while the Pizza Bala was talking about what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank and everything. And like he's like not here. He's like his body's here, but his soul is missing. So I don't think what Pizza Bala really affected him. So he doesn't really care. He's blinded. All he cares is about his chair, his political, power. And I don't think, like, even if he sees Christians suffering in front of his eyes, it will not change anything. Because what really talks to him is the power and the money.
Mm. He seems to he's an evangelical. In America, we have these evangelical Christians. They're very, very strong in the belief that God must, you know, gave the land to the Jews. It's very religious. You think that he could even see a Palestinian Christian murdered in front of him, he wouldn't care?
He wouldn't care, actually. I don't think it's anymore about Christians or Muslims. It's about humanity. They lost all of their humanity. We have evangelical church here, which is led by Father Munder Isaac. And he says the truth, and he knows what Zionism is. So if they really want to follow the evangelical church, they should listen to Father Munder Isaac and see the reality and what's happening to Christians here. They want to take over all of the historical holy sites of the Christians and Muslims, but Christians mostly, in the name of the protecting Christians. But at the end, this is not the story, or this is not the point. The point is that they want to take over everything, and they want to dispossess many, many Palestinians.
Your family's home was destroyed. It was bulldozed. You have been facing legal battles continuously because they're trying to steal your land. What is the current situation with your home?
Okay, after our legal battles and nonviolent protests and the solidarity tent and everything that we have done in El Mahdoud and the campaign that we did, we succeeded to kick them out of the land and from the outpost, from the other land that they settled in 2019. But we're still fighting, still having legal battles with the civil administration. We're still having some settlers harassment from time to time. They come and destroy our cross. Every time we put a cross, they destroy it. Every time we plant, they destroy it. They uproot it. They keep harassing us. They you know, they never back down. They keep trying. This is their game. They get money from this.
They get money from this. From who?
From the settlers' organizations.
Hmm. Where are these settlers from?
Mostly those settlers come from orphans and welfares, like governmental institutions, and they do volunteering hours in the agricultural schools that they call farms or agricultural farms. They learn how to do this agricultural, you know, planting, farming, whatever, which is at the end leads to teach them how to hate Arabs, Palestinians, how to attack them, how to organize this terrorism against Palestinians.
Mm. You said you've lived in Haifa before?
Yeah.
What is life like for you among Israelis that are not settlers?
Actually, there it's different, you know. We have like mostly Arabs in Haifa, lots of Arabs in Haifa, Christians, Muslims, and we have the Jews. They are very friendly. They are very open to the Palestinian case. Let's say they are totally different than settlers. They are totally different. And they recognize the Palestinian rights.
You've been there after 2023?
No, before.
Okay. You think it would be different?
Yeah, I think a little bit, but not in the people that like who live there, but maybe people around, like Jewish around, like from east north or somewhere from any settlements close to the north. I think this makes a big difference. And yes, let's say in general, people there, they hate Arabs more.
Yeah.
Not only, I don't mean in Haifa, I mean in general.
Like in Israel.
This government has brought so much racism between Arabs and Jews, and like even between Arabs themselves, between Jews themselves, between right and left. And now we can see the crime among the Arab society is really high. And it's been high since, but now it's even worse with the Ben-Gvir government. So people are fed up.
Why do you think the crime is higher in the Arab communities now?
Distraction. Distraction from the government. Division for the Arab society to concentrate on other things, like on the crime, to concentrate on the fear, on hiding, on trying to protect themselves from this organized crime. But I think also for the political goal, because they have elections now, and this would affect their elections. And among the settlers, they are really happy because there is lots of crime among the Arab society. So it's also give them points to make the settlers vote for them.
Do you feel like some of the crimes are false flags then, or you feel like there are Israelis that are committing them pretending to be Arab? Where explain a little bit more about this crime then.
I'm not really sure how does it work inside the 48. Maybe it could be an organized crime, okay? Or just some, you know, the Arab mafia. This mafia at the end works for a specific, you know, source. So at the end, whatever it is, it leads to the same point, which is Ben-Gvir government.
Mm, because people want to vote for a more right-wing government to stop the crime. Okay. And what do you think the solution would be? Why does there even have to be? They talk about a two-state solution. I've talked to you with you about this. I think we both know it's dead. Why does there need to be? Why can't it just be one land for all people?
Because both sides will not agree.
What about the people? Even the people that you speak with?
The people that I speak with, or let's say the people that used to come to support me or still supporting me, for example, the Israelis, they don't mind. the Palestinian, they don't mind, but there are lots of people that they mind. They cannot accept this idea because of, even after the 7th of October, it became harder, you know? Just too much hatred, too much angriness, too much anger. So they are still not ready to have this together. So at least when we have two borders, you know, two-state solution, each one with its borders, at least Palestinians can have their own justice and rights, so does the Israelis. And then after that, like it's like a test. After that, let's work on bringing this to one state. But for now, it's really hard. It's really hard. Like after the 7th of October, people becoming very, very angry, very aggressive. Especially now, we cannot live with settlers. No, settlers, it's impossible to live with. And they will not accept even the two-state solution. They will not accept it. I think also Smotrich is doing this propaganda also for the votes, but he's like trying to trick the settlers with the cabinet, you know, decisions that he's making, and then at the end he will surprise them, or Trump will surprise them with a two-state solution.
What does the future look like? Do you feel like they plan to eventually kick all of the Palestinians out of the West Bank?
No.
No.
It will never happen. It didn't happen even before. Imagine no. Like with the world waking up about what really the Palestinians have been facing since more than 70 years. So imagine now, no, it will not happen. But I think when the conflict is getting bigger, the solution is coming closer. To be done. So just a matter of time until things get solved. It's not easy. Too much corruption everywhere, in both governments. It needs to be fixed. It needs to be, done until we have the two-state solution. Because also on the Palestinian side, there is corruption.
Of course.
Like lots of people are trying to leak lands for the settlers.
Lots of people are trying to sell land to the settlers. Is that what you're saying?
Leak lands. Let's say not sell. Like everything what's happening, it's illegal, but leaking, it's somehow legal. You know, like some Palestinians, they benefit from getting so much money, so they don't care. They just try to leak lands for the settlers. Some of them are priests.
Explain a little bit more about that. You mentioned that to me, leaking land by the church leadership, or explain what's going on.
Like the Orthodox Theophilos Patriarch, you know him, right?
Yeah. Is it that one specific church?
Yeah, it's the Orthodox Church, not the church itself, but Theophilos, the Patriarch.
Okay.
He has leased lands. He has rented lands to the Jewish National Fund, like 500 dunams in Jerusalem, which is Rehavia, Talbiya, and another area near in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
It's 500 dunams.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. It's all Christian land owned.
And he sold it?
He cannot sell it, but he can rent it for 99 years.
And that's what he did to the Jewish National Fund. Say his name one more time, just so that way people listening can search him up.
Theophilos.
Theophilos. And he's the patriarch of which church?
He's the Greek Orthodox. But the idea is not Palestinian. He comes from Greece, and he comes here to rule like the church for 4 years, or I don't know how many years. And then he does everything. Like the previous one, he did the same. And they are not held accountable, and this is the problem. And when the PA wants to hold someone accountable, they say, no, the PA is treating Christians in a racist way. They are trying to persecute Christians, priests, blah, blah, blah. And this is the reality.
So even if the PA tried to do something, they say that it's being anti-Christian because they're trying to stop Christians from doing something, but they're not even Palestinian Christians. They're from Greece sometimes.
Yes, and they're corrupted.
And they're corrupt. Are they Zionists? Are some of them Zionists?
If they are not Zionists, they have to follow the orders.
Is it mainly this church or is it others?
No, it's not the church. It's people.
Leaders. Is it the specific leadership at this church or is it other leaders as well?
It's specific because the Orthodox Church has like the second largest lands after Israel.
Yeah.
So what we hear in Taibe, Deir Dibwan, Deir Jarir, Jericho, Makhrur, Musafiriyata, it's all used to be to the Orthodox. And that's why we see so much attacks there.
Why are they not Palestinian leadership in the church?
Because the church refused to have an Arab Greek leader. Many people worked on making this Arab church, but anyone who tries, they send them out of the church.
The leadership is fully Greek right now?
Yeah. And there is a priest who tried to suggest that the Orthodox church should be led by Arab. He was Greek also. They sent him out to Greece back. And
long ago was this?
It's new. It's not really old. Like a few years, like 2 or 3 years.
And how often is there new leadership? You said every 4 years?
Yani, I'm not really sure also about if it's 4 years, but I know it's like even the president is 4 years. But here we see presidents having this chair for 20 years, for 30 years. It's like becoming a kingdom, you know?
Why are they selling? Are they making money? Is that why? Are they getting money personally from doing this?
Okay, let me be clear about this. What happened in Jerusalem when the patriarch has rented lands for the Jewish National Fund, he made an agreement that he should get back the lands that the Himenuta or the Jewish National Fund companies, daughter companies, have. So if he rent those 500 dunams, he will get the lands around the West Bank back to the church.
Mm.
But not directly back to the church. He get it as to do investments with businessmen. When the two-state solution comes, he get those lands and do investments with those businessmen and earn millions and millions of dollars. So let me explain it again very well. The deal is like this. He give the Jewish National Fund 500 dunams in Jerusalem, and another secret deals, which is not really, I don't really know about them, but I know about the 500 dunams, and you can search on Google.
Yeah.
In order for the Jewish National Fund give the Orthodox back the lands that previous companies have forged documents to take over them, and give it back to the Orthodox Patriarch, and that's why they are sending settlers to kick Palestinians out, because the Orthodox Church or the Orthodox Patriarch with the Palestinian businessmen, with the Israeli businessmen, cannot kick Palestinians out in the name of the church.
Mm.
So they are using the settlers or settlements propaganda in order to kick the Palestinians out, and then they know that the two-state solution is on the way, so they take over those lands as a governmental or religious lands, and they make projects there, investments, projects, and millions of dollars without the owners on them.
And that's they kick them out of the land. They then, after they kick them out, they use the land that they stole as bargaining with the Orthodox Church in order to rent land for 99 years. So basically have the land.
In the West Bank, in the West Bank is quite maybe complicated. Because, let's say, Palestinian institutions or Palestinian businessmen or Theophilus cannot kick the people or the owners or the people that the Orthodox used to own, Orthodox Church used to own. He cannot kick the people out of it in the name of the church.
Mm.
So now they are using the settlers' propaganda, and even the settlers are being used as tools, and that's what they don't know.
By the Jewish National Fund.
Yes. They don't know that this is a tool just to kick the Palestinians out and to give it back to the investments by the Palestinians and Israelis. And then the two-state solution is on the way.
You think so?
Yeah. I think so.
Right now, this is this year more than any other year, 2025, there were more settlements built than any other year. Smotrich, Ben-Gavir, they keep stating there will never be a two-state solution. Even some American politicians have said that. Why do you feel so confident?
Because at the end, when they are talking about peace in the Middle East, the peace should include the two-state solution. There is no peace without two-state solution. And the Trump peace plan, I don't know, it doesn't sound peace plan or it doesn't look like, but at the end, it will happen. Not everyone is satisfied of what's happening in Gaza or in with the West Bank, but I think that what's happening now will bring the two-state solution on the ground. Because without this conflict, there is no solution.
Yeah.
And just by moving forward to the peace plan in Gaza, it will move also forward to the West Bank. Just a matter of time. And as I said before, the settlers are being used by tools. And the settlements, the end, it's the trailers. Could be moved anytime. It's not buildings.
Yeah, some of them. Some of them in Jerusalem, their buildings.
Lots of them in the West Bank. Like recently, in the last 20 years, like there is a settlement that has been with trailers for around 30 years.
My family's village, Burin, the settlement Yitzhar is all trailers. They're basically like trailer homes that they put the settlement.
At the end, if they wanted to build for them, they could have built a long time ago.
I hope so. Elise, is there anything else you want to say to Americans that are listening, American Christians and just Americans in general that don't know about what's happening, or what else would you like to say to Americans and also the American government?
Lots of things to say, but like I think it's enough to hear the Christian voices. For the American evangelicals and the Christians, they should hear the Christians, the indigenous Christians from Bethlehem, from the West Bank, and hear their stories and what's really happening to them. And I'm saying they don't have to be pro anything, okay? You don't have to be neither pro-Israel or pro-Palestinian, just be pro-humanity, and this is what we are asking for. Just use your humanity and to say the truth. And this is it. I know that everything in the U.S. also, it's not really good after what was released from Epstein. But this Epstein thing, it's not only in the United States. It's everywhere. The children should be rescued from everything, not only from sexual harassment or sexual assault, also from killing, from torture, from bloodshed.
Absolutely. And what about what would you like to say as a Palestinian Christian to American politicians, especially American government officials?
That if they call themselves really Christians, they should follow Jesus' teachings and stop hearing the Israeli propaganda and Netanyahu propaganda about taking care of Christians, because he cannot even take care even of his own people, how he would take care of Christians. Like every day we have settlers attacks on Christians, and they should move and do something about protecting Christians in the Middle East, in the West Bank, because as long as Christians are safe, Muslims are safe as well. We are one people. We're not really apart. So I think by saving Christians, Muslims will be saved. Also, our brother Jews will be saved. And at the end, it's not about religion. It's about humanity. So this is what they should follow, humanity.
Absolutely. Elise, thank you so much. I'm going to put your links and contact info in the description of this YouTube video as well, your Instagram and everything else. Thank you so much for speaking today.
Thank you, Ali.
Thank you. Absolutely.
There's a YouTube video that recently caught my attention, an old one posted 16 years ago by Thameen Darby. It's titled, Israel Does Not Target the Palestinian Civilians, and despite its age, it feels painfully relevant today. I strongly encourage all of you to watch it, especially those who still believe this conflict began on October 7th, 2023. This clip is essential viewing because it exposes patterns of violence and denial that long predate the current moment. It reminds us that history did not begin 2 years ago, and neither did Palestinian suffering. The footage and commentary offer a window into the narratives Israel has used for decades to justify its actions. It also challenges the myths that continue to shape public perception and political discourse. For anyone seeking clarity, context, or truth, this video is a powerful starting point. And now, to ground us in what it reveals, I'm going to read you exactly what it says. Let's start. Israel does not target civilians. It only fights its evil enemies. Some unavoidable civilian injury might accidentally occur. Israel loves Palestinian civilians. That's why it was established on the Palestinians' native land, Palestine, heavily populated by its native inhabitants, the Palestinians. And because Israel adores the Palestinian civilians, it kicked the Palestinians out of their homes and occupied the place. Surprisingly, these Palestinians became refugees and started rudely resisting the occupation. They became freedom fighters. Oops, they became terrorists. Peaceful Israel only fights the terrorists. Israel values civilians. But to fight terrorists, it airstrikes densely populated places. By pure chance, homes get destroyed and thousands killed and injured. Israel indeed respects civilians. It kindly turned their cities into large open-air prisons. Israel has a high regard for civilians, but to discipline the terrorists, it imposes mass punishment on the population. Examples: cutting off water supplies, long curfews, and restriction of movement. Israel does not target civilians, but for security, it encircles the Palestinians within a wall, fortuitously stealing more of the Palestinian fields and water. Israel does not hurt civilians, but to pinpoint terrorists, it uses tank shells against heavily residential areas. By coincidence, civilians are mysteriously killed in hundreds. Israel loves civilians. But to surgically uproot terrorism, it uses one-ton bombs against neighborhoods. Surprisingly, thousands of civilians get killed and injured. Israel adores civilians. Israel is mad about civilians, so it uses cluster bombs on their cities and villages. By absolute coincidence, kids step on them and lose their legs and arms. Israel worships civilians. Israel finds Palestinian civilians irresistible. Thus, occasionally, it uses phosphorus bombs and depleted uranium bombs over Palestinian cities. Civilians get burned and radiated by pure, unfortunate mistake. Israel is keen on civilians, so the kind Israeli soldiers face demonstrations with live ammunition, unconsciously shooting civilians in the heads and chests. Israel is devoted to civilians, so as an extra special treat for its beloved occupied civilians, it generously built hundreds of illegal settlements on the occupied Palestinian lands, stealing more of the Palestinians' land. Israel only targets terrorists. Although Israel idolizes civilians, many ignorant people shamelessly and audaciously call its leads and soldiers child killers because somehow, in a mysterious way, in an unexplained, mystifying manner, in a weird, baffling pattern, in a strange, puzzling fact, most of Israel's victims are kids. But in fact, poor Israel aches for civilians, loves civilians, is fond of them, so much fond of them, so much more. Loves the old and the young, the tiny, the very tiny, lonely, in pairs, in piles. Sample statistics of Israel's love of Palestinian civilians. The first Palestinian uprising against Israel in 1987, civilians killed 1,489, militants killed 10, 99.5% civilians. The second Palestinian uprising against Israel, 2000, civilians killed 4,860, militants killed 800, 86% civilians. The Israel-Lebanon War, 2006, civilians killed 1,200, militants killed 250, 83% civilians. The Israel War on Gaza, 2009, civilians killed 1,400, militants killed 100, 93% civilians. Simple facts of Israel's devotion to Palestinian civilians. Palestine is tiny, half the size of Hawaii. The occupied Palestinians are 4 million people. Israel occupied Palestine for 62 years. During this time, Israel can claim to the following achievements. Israel killed 19,725 civilians. That's 5 in 1,000 of the Palestinian population, or 2 million civilians killed in USA scale. Israel injured 80,000 civilians. That's 20 in 1,000 of the Palestinian population, or 8 million civilians injured in USA scale. Israel demolished 50,000 Palestinian homes. That's 1 in 10 of Palestinian homes, or 5 million homes in USA scale. Israel uprooted about 500,000 olive trees. Israel is the only country in the world that uproots trees as a collective punishment. Israel arrested 300,000 Palestinians. That is 15% of the adult Palestinian population. Israel loves civilians. Israel venerates civilians, is obsessed with civilians, craves civilians, longs for civilians, desires civilians, yearns for civilians, wants them so much, covets them, is passionate about them, does not target them. And if these civilians get killed, it is, of course, the civilians' fault. Golda Meir, the former Israeli prime minister, said, "We cannot forgive the Palestinians for forcing us to kill their children." Just a reminder, this YouTube clip was 16 years ago by Famin Darby. Since then, Israel claims it has become more humane, insisting it no longer targets civilians. But the reality on the ground tells a different story. Entire villages and cities wiped off the map, erased with devastating force. What is denied in words is carried out in practice through policies that destroy communities rather than protect them. This is the truth we must confront, no matter how carefully it is concealed. Just look at Gaza and the West Bank, and you know what I mean. And with that, we close this week's episode. As always, stay curious, stay courageous, and keep asking the questions that unsettle power, cut through silence, and move us closer to justice. I'm Abby Masri, your host and narrator. It has been a profound honor to share this space with you, a space where truth is spoken without hesitation, where resistance is held with reverence, and where solidarity is never conditional and never up for negotiation. If you have reflections or questions, or if you feel called to step behind the mic as a future host, we welcome your voice. Reach us anytime at twippodcasts@gmail.com. To our listeners, thank you. Thank you for your time, your trust, and your willingness to walk this difficult road with us. And to the remarkable team whose dedication keeps this platform alive. Bob Funk, Stanley Robinson, Stephen Lowe, Sophia Rose Woolman, Tahani Abu Mosa, Dr. Bethany Marks, Dr. Rana Awad, Professor Yara Rashid, Juliet Salame Olivier, Reinad Al-Ghul, and our editor, Muhammad Al-Ghul. Your labor, your spirit, and your unwavering commitment are the heartbeat of this show. Each week you remind us that storytelling is more than a craft. It is an inheritance of struggle and devotion. It is resistance. It is care. It is collective memory. Until next time, keep walking toward truth. Keep walking toward Palestine. This Week in Palestine is a production of Truth and Justice Radio, proudly broadcasting for more than 20 years from WZBC Student Radio at Boston College. If you miss this radio hour, you can find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Buzzsprout, Podcast Index, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Pocket Casts, Deezer, Listen Notes, Overcast, CastBox, Player FM, and Good Pods. You can also explore over two decades of archives on radioforall.net and archive.org. Simply search for This Week in Palestine, or TWIP, and look for the image of the little girl raising her hands in the victory gesture. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, take care. Stay steadfast. Free Palestine.